Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Next time that we're on the air together, this upcoming Tuesday, the transfer portal will be open and your favorite team's roster will never be the same. Even with that being said, we've got some movement, got some intends to enter, and got some folks that we thought were intending to enter and in fact are not going to enter. Let's break it down, baby. Welcome into the Hard Count, the People's College Football Show, talking ball year round. It is Thursday, April 11th, 2024, the last one on the face of the planet. We got Kalen DeBoer joining the show today, baby. The head coach for the Alabama Crimson Tide. We sat down with him yesterday in Tuscaloosa and asked him about everything from, hey, coach, we were rocking the salmon suit for the spring game. Hey, coach, what's going on with Jalen Milroe? How are we doing from a culture standpoint? Are you far enough along as you'd like to be? And he was phenomenal, man. Gave us right around 15 minutes of his time talking all those things and then some. So excited to show y'all that conversation here ahead of Alabama's A-Day this weekend. Speaking of A-Day, there's a fair amount of big-time spring games on the docket for this Saturday. If you've tuned into this show before or this channel before during the season, we have a specific structure we have in place called the Sunday Sprint. And the Sunday Sprint is essentially us watching ball all Saturday, and then Sunday morning, Nick Brake and I get in here in the dojo, and we just start cranking out videos for when you wake up and you go on the YouTube channel, you get to see our reactions to the games from yesterday. So it's going to be kind of a spring Sunday Sprint for us as well. So we'll have reactions for you for those games when you wake up on Sunday morning. But before we get to the reaction, I want to preview those games a little bit too. We got like six or seven high-profile schools with their spring game, including Georgia, Miami, Florida. So we understand now spring, as we say a lot on this show, it's for taking a temperature and not making absolutes. But even with that being said, I think there's a lot of things to watch here this upcoming weekend in those respective spring games. As I just mentioned, we were in Tuscaloosa yesterday. The day before, we were in Knoxville. So those of y'all that tuned into the show yesterday, you saw the interview with Josh Heupel. I want us to unpack in a little bit more depth our visit to Tennessee, because they were phenomenal to us, man. Bill Martin and company over there, first-class operation, allowed us to watch spring practice, allowed us to, you know, look around the facility. It was a blast. There's a few more notes that I want us to get out here before we move on, as they have their spring game this upcoming Saturday as well. Let's talk a little bit, too, about this stance that folks have on spring games in general when it comes to their format. This is that time of the year where a lot of people are going to tell you, man, it's only a matter of time until FCS teams start playing Alabama in their spring game or Georgia in their spring game. That's going to make a whole lot of sense. This is why it should happen. I have a very, very strong feel against that, a very, very strong opinion against that, and I'll tell you why here a little bit later on in the show. Glad to have you all here. Make sure you're subscribed. Don't miss a minute of what we got going on right here on this show, on this channel, right here on the On3 YouTube channel, on this show, The Hard Count. It's college football year-round, the way that you want it covered. We don't take a break. There's not an offseason. It's just ball all the time, pretty much how college football operates right now. And there is no greater example than college football being a year-round sport than the evolution of the transfer portal. Now, the transfer portal opens up this coming Tuesday, but even with that being said, there's a couple of updates we got to get aligned on here before that thing does open up. You're already seeing some names pop up with the intends to enter kind of verbiage. Some guys can't enter yet, so they're just announcing, hey, I'm going to be in there. When that thing opens up, I'll be in there. And one guy we thought was going to be there was USC's defensive lineman, Bear Alexander. That was news that we thought was going to happen. Turns out, he's staying. Okay, Bear Alexander took to Twitter to say as much. He said via Twitter, he said, I'm not crystal clear on all the noise or what any of this portal mess is about. I'm here to finish what I started, and that's chasing a natty here at USC with my teammates, hashtag fight on. And he threw the peace sign emojis in there for good measure. So good for Bear Alexander, good for USC. Did some digging on this. What I'm told is that there were some NIL misunderstandings, some NIL confusion to, you know, kind of get ironed out, got smoothed over. And Bear Alexander, as per his own Twitter handle, for his own Twitter page, is going to stay at USC. This is absolutely massive. This is absolutely massive. And in the literal sense, because the dude's 6'3", 313, and guys like that don't just grow on trees. But as USC moves into the Big Ten, how much have you heard us talk about USC's defense and having to meet the price of admission in the Big Ten Conference? The Big Ten is a line of scrimmage league. If you don't have guys like a Bear Alexander in the middle of your defense, you're going to be in for a very, very long season. So keeping him in L.A., massive. Again, very, very encouraged if you're a USC fan that he's not going anywhere. Very big keep for USC. LSU linebacker Jackson Howard intends to enter the transfer portal. Howard was a top 120 recruit in the class of 2023. Interesting note here. He's a linebacker. You're saying, no, he's a linebacker. Remember what we said yesterday on our show? Linebackers now are going to be a hot commodity. So don't be surprised if Jackson Howard ends up at another high-profile school. Again, 6'4", 241. Just because you didn't start at LSU as a true freshman doesn't mean you can't play some ball. So keep an eye on Jackson Howard. Colorado safety Miles Slusher intends to enter the portal. He was previously at Arkansas, and then he transferred to Colorado, and now he's back in the portal with 2 years left, or he's going to be back in the portal with 2 years left. 6 foot, 195 pounds, 110 career tackles. So he's not one of those DBs who just wants to play the football and sit back and pass coverage. Like, he's more than willing to get out there and mix it up. Curious to see what his market is, but regardless, there's going to be, I'm sure, a fair amount of suitors for a Miles Slusher. Damian Martinez was probably the biggest name to announce their intentions to enter the portal. Jesse Simonton, again, I cannot stress this enough. Make sure you're following Jesse Simonton on Twitter or following him on X, whatever we're calling it now. He just continues to deliver heat-seeking missiles when it comes to his columns. He put out a list of five schools that he thinks would be a good fit for Damian Martinez. I'm not going to list all five, but I want to go over a couple here. Miami would make a lot of sense. Like Jesse says, they're a clear player when it comes to the transfer portal ball game. And with the loss, more or less, of a Henry Parrish, looks like they're going to probably have a few more backs they want to add to that room, or at least one. And Damian Martinez being an all Pac-12 kind of player, over 1,000-yard rusher, that'd be a big pickup for them. Michigan State probably makes the most sense from a logistics standpoint. Jonathan Smith, his head coach last year at Oregon State, takes the job at Michigan State, along with a couple of his other teammates, with Aiden Childs and Jack Velling. Just stick with your same head coach, have some familiarity there, playing the Big Ten. I don't know if Michigan State's in the best position to allow him to have the same kind of success he had at Oregon State last year, but regardless, Michigan State, from a personnel standpoint, would make sense. You're going to see schools like a Miami and like a Ole Miss, I think, continue to be aggressive in the portal. One, because they have the resources. Two, because they have the staff that wants to add to their roster, and Ole Miss doing Ole Miss things and Lane Kiffin doing Lane Kiffin things in the portal would make a lot of sense. Remember now, Ole Miss lost Quinshon Judkins to the portal in that first window. So at the very least, there's some production to be made up. You go land a Damian Martinez, there are worse ways to go about it. So go check out that article on all3.com from Jesse to get that full list of five, but those are three that I thought were worth highlighting for us during this segment. Speaking of running backs, Brandon Campbell is a transfer running back from Houston. Now, here's the thing with Brandon. He is already in the transfer portal as a graduate transfer. The way the portal works, you're able to jump in there earlier if you've already graduated. So he's in there. He started his career at USC, and he was formerly a four-star recruit out of high school, 5'10", 210 pounds. Decent production throughout his career. I mean, he's got 120 carries for right around 500 yards, a couple of touchdowns. So there's still, I think, some potential there with him and with, you know, the rest of his college career. So we'll see where he ends up. But again, a four-star player out of high school. Maybe it's just a fit thing for him. Maybe he's got to find the right fit. A couple more notes here on the transfer portal. The quarterback market is going to be a talking point, I think, here throughout spring games. And what I want to make sure we're aligned on here, like I said yesterday, the quarterback position, similar to the rest of the market, is going to have some more noise later in the cycle, meaning you're going to see a lot of names pop up close to the end of that deadline for guys to put their name into the portal. Reason for that being, some of these quarterbacks that might already see the writing on the wall and understand, hey, I might be a three, I might be a backup, they're going to want to help themselves by having a solid spring game, have sort of an audition for a future roster spot or a future school that might need a quarterback, and then hit the portal after they do what they want to do in that spring game. Malik Murphy and the buzz that he generated last year before staying at Texas is a great example of what you would hope you're able to do if you're a backup quarterback at one of those schools. Also worth noting, if you're banking on getting a transfer portal quarterback in that second window, I don't know this is going to be the market for you. Now, I'm not saying there's not going to be any high-profile quarterbacks that are in there, but from talking to folks that cover this thing, there is a feel that a lot of starting quarterbacks are going to stay put. Like, I know there's this idea that the portal is going to be crazy, and it will be crazy, but it's not going to be a thing where every single starting quarterback across the power conferences are jumping in there and testing the waters and seeing what they can get. One, if that were the case, that's already happened behind closed doors before them even having to enter into the portal. Second, a lot of these guys, I think, are happy with their situations, and it's not going to be a thing where, again, you have a bunch of high-profile guys in there at the quarterback position. So might be a couple, but if you're banking on landing one, I would say aim small, miss small. So that's kind of the latest on the portal there. Make sure you're subscribed here. We're going to cover the portal better than anybody else in the country. I promise you, this is the spot you want to be locked in at. The team here at On Three Man, second to none when it comes to portal coverage. So keep it locked in right here. Hey, appreciate everybody tuned in live. Make sure you liked the video. Just keeping that algorithm happy. The algorithm, man, it's a fickle, fickle thing. So we got to kind of do what it wants us to do there. Let's keep it moving here. Before we get to our Kalen DeBoer conversation, I want us to talk a little bit about the spring games that are on the docket for us here this Saturday. Because, man, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of high-profile ones to unpack here. And, again, spring for us here on this show is for making an overall assessment. We're not trying to diagnose everything. We're just kind of trying to take a temperature of where these rosters are at, the progress, because, again, it's a vanilla scheme. These guys have already had their more intense scrimmages behind closed doors. So what should we look for during these spring games? We'll talk about it right now. Alabama has their A-Day this upcoming Saturday. The thing that I'm watching in the A-Day, Jalen Milroe being isolated as a passing quarterback. Because Jalen Milroe, it's no secret what he can do with his legs, man. Like, nobody on that staff or in college football period is wondering what he can do when he tucks it and runs. The thing that I'm curious to see is how comfortable he looks in Kalen DeBoer's offense. Jalen Milroe is going to have the black shirt on. He's going to be non-contact. They're not going to be a lot of design quarterback runs called. So how does he look when he is isolated as a passer in their base offense, okay? The question isn't him as a football player. The question is his ability if you take away his legs. We're going to get to have a very small peek at that, I think, in this A-Day. And if he's able to be successful as a one-dimensional passer when he gets his legs back in a real 11-on-11 setting during the fall, like, Bama's going to be tough to stop. Bama's going to be very, very tough to stop. I specifically am most curious about his accuracy and consistent accuracy in that range that's right around 10 to 15 yards, the intermediate game. That's going to be, you know, in front of the safety, but over the linebackers. Curious to watch that. Ohio State, they got a nationally televised spring game on Fox. A lot of new faces. Like, you could just, I mean, have yourself a day and a half watching specifically the Julian Sayin and the Will Howard. I'm excited to watch those guys. I'm excited to see where Julian Sayin takes his reps. Is he running with the ones? Is he running with the twos? I don't expect Julian Sayin to start. But, you know, you kind of divvy the reps up a little bit more. Coaches want to eval guys during this process. So, curious to watch that. The thing that I'm watching most closely is what Jeremiah Smith does. Because if you've been tuned into the spring football extravaganza that's been going on the Ohio State social media page, it is Jeremiah Smith making acrobatic catch, making one-handed catch, going up and over all Big Ten defensive backs and making deep receptions. What does he look like in the spring game? In the social media now, you only get a small part of that context. Like, you just kind of see the moment itself where he catches the football. What does he do play in and play out? How does he look, you know, when he has a small screen pass and just picks up 5 yards? Like, what are we getting play in and play out from Jeremiah Smith and not just the highlights? I'm excited to watch that. Caleb Downs, too. All-American, freshman All-American safety transferring over from Alabama, the top player in the transfer portal, arguably the biggest win of the offseason for anybody. How comfortable does he look in that Jim Knowles defense? And the thing with a Jim Knowles defense, it's a little bit exotic, a little bit counterintuitive in terms of the actual rules you have if you're a defensive player in that scheme. It's not an easy thing to learn. I mean, the jump that Ohio State made defensively as a unit from year one to year two under Jim Knowles, I think their familiarity with that system was a big part of that. Caleb Downs, having been there for all of, like, when it comes to the spring game, it'll be 14 practices. How comfortable is he? Does he know where to, you know, align pre-snap? Does he look like he's able to have some ad-lib within that scheme in terms of, can he disguise it well? Does he have to get right to his assignment? I'm curious to watch that. Again, it's not a thing where we're making an overarching definitive statement on him, but I'm just curious to see the progress there. Georgia and their G-Day will be this Saturday. The buzz around that wide receiver room this spring has been palpable. You got Colby Young transferring over from Miami. You got London Humphreys, Nashville kid who transferred from Vanderbilt over to Georgia. Arian Smith has generated more buzz than I can remember since he's been in Athens. The thing with this is if they hit with those guys, if they are as advertised and they reach their potential, Georgia as an offense is going to be absolutely terrifying because we know what they can do up front. Like, yes, there's some new pieces on that offensive line. I understand that. But we know they're going to be able to pound the rock. That's who Georgia is. That's their identity. That's not changing at all. So when you have that part of your offense, and then you pair that with three wide receivers who all reach their potential and you can stretch the field vertically, you really put defenses in a bind. The more versatile and multidimensional Georgia can be, the scarier they're going to be for defenses in the fall. And also worth noting, the more you maximize your talent at wide receiver, the more you maximize the talent you have at quarterback, which I think you got the best quarterback in America in Carson Beck coming into the season. Speaking of quarterbacks, Miami's got a new one. They're breaking in Cam Ward. Really simple for me when I watch Miami spring game. How in rhythm is Cam Ward running this offense? I don't need to see the 60-yard bomb. That would be nice if we could get, you know, get a look at that, Cam. It'd be nice if you show off the can a little bit. We'd appreciate that. I don't need to see the threading the needle between the two safeties and throwing just dime rocks. How comfortable does he look getting from his second progression to his third progression? How comfortable does he look throwing the ball on time, knowing where he's got to go with the football? It sounds simplistic, but I'm telling you, you get to these spring games and quarterbacks that have gotten, you know, 14 practices to this point, being in an 11-on-11 competitive setting with, you would hope there's a little bit of a buzz in the air for that, a little bit more competitive juice flowing. Is he still able to be controlled? Here's the key thing I'm looking for. Does he move the offense? Do drives end in touchdowns? It's got to happen at practice before it happens out there in the fall on Saturdays. LSU, same thing. Garrett Nussmeier now, we know he can throw the football, man. Garrett Nussmeier, first team all Uncle Rico. There's no way around him, man. The dude can just sling the pill around the yard like a shady pharmacist, is what we say on this show. I don't have any question marks around him being able to make that big shot. I'm curious, does he go the right place with the football, and does he keep the ball out of harm's way? Because what I just said for Cam Ward is absolutely true about Garrett Nussmeier. You don't go from making poor decisions at practice to somehow making great decisions on game day. Garrett Nussmeier, if he plays within the structure of this offense and is able to get the ball to their weapons, and some of those weapons are new now, CJ Daniels, curious to see how he looks long-term at LSU. That's going to be massive, and that's going to ultimately, I think, lead to a maybe not identical output that Jaden Daniels had at LSU, but if you can even be in the same ballpark, good things are going to happen for the Tigers. Florida, they're going into the year three experience of the Billy Napier era. I just want to see them look like a year three offense. Okay, because Graham Mertz now going into his second season. I'm talking about the operation as a whole. Are we doing things to give ourselves the best chance to be successful offensively? What I mean by that is don't hurt yourself. Florida last year was one of the worst teams in the country protecting the quarterback. 9% sack rate. Y'all, that's abysmal. That's good for 100-something in the country. It's not good at all. Procedurally, do we look like we're able to line up and be able to, you know, have our assignment play in and play out before the snap? There were a lot of times where I saw Florida look a lot more like a year one operation than a year two operation. Some of that started in the spring game, honestly, last year. Now, to be fair, Graham Mertz, it was his first spring last year in Gainesville. So how does he look his second year as the guy, third year under Billy Napier for this offense? Do they look like a clean operation? I'm excited to watch that. Secondary also worth noting. A lot of cats in that secondary that didn't play last year that are now healthy and that are going to, they expect to contribute in a big way. Do they look like they're in position? If you have a touchdown thrown against you, it happens. That's football. Do we see guys in position, competing, making plays on the football? Is there a better product that makes me feel like there's an uptick coming in 2024 for Florida? Last team here, Ole Miss. It's no secret what Ole Miss did in the portal, man. We talked about it on the show a lot. Prince Liu Manmielen, dog. Walter Nolan, dog. Both those dudes that have played in the SEC. Both dudes that have played big boy football. I don't need to see Prince Liu Manmielen coming off the edge and tag off on Jackson Dart. I don't need to see them get a bunch of sacks. What I'm curious is, when I watch that line of scrimmage, when I'm watching the TV broadcast, do I see a noticeable movement from the defensive line against the offensive line? Do I see that line shift where the defensive line is getting a really solid push and at least applying some pressure? I don't need to see tackles for a loss. It'd be nice. I don't need to see sacking the quarterback because, again, the quarterback's going to be in a a non-contact jersey anyway, are we getting a solid push that we think is going to translate to the fall? Because last year, Ole Miss allowed 4 yards a carry. 4 yards a carry. Not horrible. I think it's like middle of the pack nationally. But middle of the pack nationally will get you absolutely dominated in the SEC. Can't happen. I don't expect it will happen. Watching that in this spring game for Ole Miss. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. We talked about this a little bit with Josh Heupel, too, when it came to Tennessee's spring game. He's going to watch the Young Bucks play a little bit, so that'll be fun. We will obviously watch the Young Bucks there as well. Be fun to see the Nico era kind of get rolling. I don't think he'll play a whole lot in that spring game, just to be honest with you. That's my feel on things. But regardless, that's our thought on Tennessee's spring game as well. Just a little nugget for you there if you're tuned in to that this weekend. All right. We were fortunate enough to sit down with the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide, Coach Kalen DeBoer, and this was awesome, man. I mean, just a really good dude. He was happy to sit down and do it with us for a few minutes, and, I mean, he didn't seem like he was in a rush. Like, he was just happy to sit there, talk ball, and we were very grateful for his time. Without further ado, here's our conversation with Kalen DeBoer. And we are here at the Mal Moore Athletic Facility with the head coach of Alabama football, Kalen DeBoer. Coach, this is awesome. This is a beautiful facility y'all have. Are you having a blast here so far, being the head coach for now a few months?
Yeah, it's been great. 3 months in and, you know, spring ball almost wrapped up, only two practices to go. So it's gone fast, but it's been really cool bringing the staff together, our players. You know, we're where I'd hoped we'd be and, you know, making every day matter. The guys are doing a great job.
So Andy Staples, one of my coworkers, came through here a couple weeks ago, asked you an important question about your headwear. I want to know, are you rocking the salmon suit for the A-Day? I know Coach Saban did that. Do we have our outfit picked out? Are we going with the blazer? Is there a vision for that yet?
I don't think I can pull that off like Coach did. And, you know, that was a great tradition, one that he, you know, was a big deal. But I think I got to go with who I am. So we'll – don't know exactly what I'm going with yet. Based on traditions, it's an important move here, so I got to be smart with what we go with.
Well, there's zero chance I could pull that off either, so if that makes you feel any better. I think that's probably a just a Coach Saban thing. But when it comes to this job and maybe your expectations you had when you took it in January, how has the reality compared?
Yeah, I think it's not been much different than what I really imagined to be in. You knew, you know, the timeline based on when I got hired, that it was going to be quick and fast and furious, whether it's the early signing day, which probably wasn't even that big of a deal, more of just keeping the roster intact. And then, the quick flip to the beginning of spring ball. And, you know, now a lot of guys coming to campus and just, you know, everything that goes along there with a lot of prospects coming by and, just today, the day-to-day operations. But the staff is a group of staff members, you know, on and off the field that have just really all taken their role and, you know, ran with it the way I'd hoped, and, you know, really continue to push forward. And so got some big months here ahead with, you know, spring recruiting and then, of course, official visits going into the summer. So we'll just continue to keep the pedal down.
And everyone's talking about the portal and spring practice. I mean, there's a million different headlines, obviously, since you've taken this job. Is there something that you wish folks were talking about a little bit more with you or with this team, or just a narrative that you wish was out there a little bit more with this football team?
No, I get it. I mean, I get that that's what the storylines are right now. And, I mean, you know, you always want more about your guys, you know, and you're proud of them. And you also understand more and more of their individual journeys. And, you know, that time will come, though. We'll continue to just push those stories, those great things that, you know, your guys have been through and you know, that will continue to happen as I continue to get to know them as well.
Are there any of those guys that have maybe stood out more than others during, I mean, everyone's doing a great job, I'm sure, during spring ball, but anyone that you're like, man, this was someone that I wasn't super familiar with, but now he's done a phenomenal job during spring. It's going to help us in the fall.
You know, I mean, yeah, we could probably go on and on and on. There's just a lot of really great athletes out here that, you know, came here for a reason. That's to win championships and to continue to grow and develop, you know, on and off the field. And they've done that. And they've really embraced our coaching staff and, you know, the little tweaks that are just different because, you know, I'm a different head coach, you know, than what they had before. And they've just taken it all in and just continue to roll with it. And, you know, we're making it ours.
John Wood, the coach at UCLA for forever coaching basketball there, had that pyramid of success. I've heard you reference loosely you sort of having your own pyramid. What goes into that for you, and what makes that up?
Yeah, to me, it's you know, it kind of revolves around what our goals are, and that's to win our, you know, the conference and national championship, and then we talk about winning it with class integrity and academic excellence. And so, to me, it's the foundation of how we're going to do things, but also what we're trying to accomplish. And that's really what that's always been. When I was a coordinator, it had just different things in different slots, but it talked about the core values, the non-negotiables. You know, and for us, the non-negotiables as a team are to have a family atmosphere, kind of that feel of brotherhood, you know, and that, you know, that you're playing for someone else, not just yourself here and your teammates and how important they are. And then accountability and then toughness.
Obviously spring is, you know, not finished yet. So that, you know, you're still getting some more practices and we got the A-Day coming up. But when you look at your team right now, where they are in the spring and to where you'd like them to be relative to that pyramid, how close are they to that?
Yeah. I mean, we're not there yet. You know, we got ways to go, and just each and every day though, we are taking those steps. And, you know, I think what I saw from scrimmage one to scrimmage two, you know, really is reminiscent of how we want it to be. You know, the areas where maybe a position group or a side of the ball were a little bit deficient, you know, not where we needed to be. That focus and that emphasis happening the next few practices leading to the next scrimmage, you really saw, you know, things balance out, you know, and now there's new things, right? It's just a greater detail. And, you know, we're continuing to, yesterday was a great practice in that way. And I anticipate tomorrow's practice to be very, very competitive. You know, we're not going with, you know, your typical spider pads. We already had that practice last week. We're going to roll and get after it again tomorrow. And then, you know, Saturday's the game. So we're going to take advantage of every moment, every rep that these guys get to take.
So a lot of folks got introduced to Jalen Monroe last year, and clearly just must-see TV for college football fans. Like anytime he tucked in and runs, you're like holding your breath. Is there a tailoring of the offense that you're doing even during spring practice right now? Or how, what's the split, if you will, between running what you've run previously and then tailoring that to a guy like Jalen Milroe?
Yeah, he's certainly got a different skill set. And, you know, you alluded to the fact that him as a runner is something that you have to make sure that you're going to be able to utilize. And right now, though, we're just installing the offense. And so with the skill around him, and that always being going to be the case where we need to bring in and make every one of the receivers, running backs, tight ends a threat, we just got to learn the whole offense, you know, run game. But also, I think what, you know, we're talking about the passing game. He needs to be able to distribute the football and make the throws, make the reads. He's really growing and developing in that way. Really, really happy with what we've seen. And then I think, you know, as a runner, he needs to understand that that's a skill set that, you know, 99% of the country doesn't have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he is that guy, you know, can go anytime on the length of the field. And, you know, the coordinators hopefully holding their breath each and every night and each and every play. But, you know, he needs to just stay the course but not forget, you know, what makes him different.
Because you mentioned playmakers. You had the equivalent of the Monstars at Washington last year in your wide receiver room from Roma Dunze and Jalen Polk and guys like that. How does this group compare to what you had at Washington and, I guess, you know, utilizing them in this offense?
Yeah, I think what you saw there, too, was guys in their second year, you know, and really going through. And so they had to learn the offense, obviously a ton of skill, great, you know, but those guys worked. Those guys worked. And, yes, God-given talent and things like that, But they worked, and they worked, you know, individually, they worked collectively, they worked with the quarterbacks, you know, with Penix, you know, and so, you know, that's what these guys, you know, they're making those steps daily. They're putting in the work. They're you know, working on their individual, you know, route running and, you know, just getting more comfortable. And that's going to be a theme that they continue to hear from us. And, you know, throughout the summer, they got to put in the work. In fall camp, they got to put in the work. And every day, you know, throughout even the season, you know, we just got to keep getting better and better. People are going to recognize what those things are that are our strengths and are going to adjust to us. And then we got to have, you know, other things that we can do to where we can make those counter adjustments also.
Is there a vision for this team defensively that's different from previous squads? Obviously, Ken Walmick, you know, running the defense for you this year.
How do you see that when you fast forward the tape a year down the road with what the what this defense will be?
Yeah, I think there's naturally going to be some differences. I think the structure of the secondary and what the appearance is there will look a little different. But as much as things are different, I think they're still the same. And the way we utilize some of our, you know, outside linebacker edge type players, the interior D line is going to be what it is. And so, maybe tendencies and how you call things and just, you know, that's the style that goes along with just like it would be for a head coach. It is what it is when you're a coordinator too, and it's going to be different. So I really like, you know, the way we've come along again, that progression from beginning to scrimmage one to scrimmage two. And then these last couple practices, just really going to the spring recruiting or summer with a lot of confidence and a lot of areas where we can continue to see that growth is going to lead us into a great fall camp.
Is Roll Tide Willie on staff yet? Or is he analyst role? Are we going to get him in there in the spring game to call a few plays? And he likes to blitz.
We haven't gone there. He definitely likes to blitz. And so, he made an appearance at practice the other day, and it was, I'd never met him, and it was fun to have him there. And I think our guys really enjoyed that.
Social media gold. I mean, for me personally, just scrolling through the Twitter timeline, I'm like, that's awesome. I'm going to go play for Bama. Speaking of recruiting, like you just mentioned, when you have those big time guys, you know, whether it be on the phone or on campus, what is the pitch or the conversation for you to bring them to Tuscaloosa?
In a certain position or all?
I mean, just overarching, if you have a certain position, in a certain formula, that's great too.
Yeah, I think, each coach, each side of the ball kind of has their things that they're catering to. And, you're going to talk about the spots in the program where, you know, maybe we're short numbers and there's a great opportunity to step on the field sooner than later, just because of guys graduating on or what you anticipate here in the year or years to come. And then I think there's also just the style of play, you know, and guys that fit our style. And you can talk all the way across the board from the running backs and the number of carries our guys have gotten, you know, even last year, within this system, what we're going to do defensively and where the ball gets funneled to in the secondary, or who's making the plays and the dynamic players that it takes on the outside and the edges, the opportunities to get to the quarterback and cause havoc in the backfield. So there's a lot of just those type of selling points that are made each and every day by each position coach when players come in. It's just make sure, you know, also that we're getting to know each other and the relationships are really what it's going to be all about. And I think that's what you hear from most guys when they walk in the door is, how's that fit going to be with their coach and, you know, the players that are here.
Hey, Coach, you just mentioned Justice Haynes, or you mentioned the running back room. In my mind, I'm thinking about Justice Haynes because that dude's built like a truck. What's been your impressions of him so far this spring?
Yeah, I think he and Jam Miller just doing a great job. They've kind of alternated really most of the reps and just keeping them healthy, but also getting them the reps in the new system and processing and all that. But Justice does, you know, all of that. You're asking specifically about him. He packs that punch. He's got the speed. He's been really a great learner, and open to everything that we've been throwing at him.
Awesome. Well, Coach, last question for you. We appreciate all your time. Everyone that gets a microphone like me gets to talk about expectations for Bama and what's going to happen, you know, win-loss, all that. For you, whether it be a win-loss number or not, is there – expectations or a definition of success for you for year one here in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really get into the number of wins and things like that. We understand what the expectations are here, and that's to be a championship caliber team, and that's what we're going to strive to be. The way we do it is what we're really focused on, and we're going to every day, you know, make that progress I was kind of talking about from spring ball to summer and so forth, and we got to make sure that all the way through the season, you know, that we continue to evolve, continue to adjust, continue to grow and develop individually and as a unit, as a program, to where, you know, we're playing our best ball at the end. But we do have to be ready to go at the beginning of the season and, make sure, we're ready to go and get those wins that are needed, as you accumulate them to the end of the year and get those championship opportunities.
Coach Kalen DeBoer, Coach, appreciate all your time. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Roll Tide.
Again, appreciate all the folks at Alabama showing us such great hospitality. Coach giving us so much time. Man, I'm fired up to watch that day now. It's a new era. It's been a long time since there's been a different head coach coaching the spring game out there. So the Kalen DeBoer era begins in Tuscaloosa, and I'm excited to see it. So we were on the road in Tuscaloosa yesterday. The day before, though, we got to Knoxville, Tennessee. And since we did the live show from the Mile More Athletic Facility at Alabama, it just kind of felt inappropriate to talk about our travels from the day before at another school within their conference, a rival school within the conference. So we're going to do that right now, man. We got out to Tennessee, and it was an absolute blast. I mean, we got to sit there for the entirety of practice, got to watch team periods, got to watch 7-on-7, got to look around the building. Like, the folks over at Tennessee were phenomenal to us. Bill Martin, the best in the business. And a couple of takeaways from that practice. The first thing for me, whenever I get to watch a practice like that, I'm always curious about, you know, the vibe and the tempo. And those are things that, you know, you can't really quantify. But watching this practice, I think the best way to put it for me was it looked like a year four practice. Like, it looked like a team that knew their operation. They knew what they were supposed to do. They were running from drill to drill. It wasn't a whole lot of, hey, where am I supposed to be at? We got guys in the wrong drill. We got guys doing the wrong thing. Like, it was a crisp operation. And also, there was some pretty good competitive juice now. During those team periods, you saw guys battling, saw guys going back and forth. And it's one thing to do that on the first day of spring practice. Y'all, they're in double digits right now. They got the spring game coming up this Saturday. They got the light at the end of the tunnel. Because if you're a college football player going through those 15 practices, man, that's a grind. It's an absolute grind. So it's very easy for your energy and your effort to kind of take a little dip, and maybe you take a practice a little bit less intensely as the other ones before. Not as much to get excited about. That was not the vibe I got from that practice, and Josh Heupel said as much when we got to talk to him. The tight end room that they have there, I'm pretty excited to watch here in the fall. I'll tell you about that, but first things first, make sure you subscribe right here to the On3 YouTube channel. If you're watching this as a one-off video, welcome. We're glad to have you here. Again, make sure you subscribe. This is part of a live show that we're doing right now. So if you're watching in real time, you're a real one. So we appreciate you for that as well. As I said, the tight end room looks really solid. Holden Stays, the transfer from Notre Dame, he looks every bit of 6'4", 242 pounds. I'm excited to see how they utilize him in the pass game, because you put that dude on a linebacker, I mean, that's going to be just throw it up to the top shelf where the kids can't get it and let him go make plays in the red zone. Miles Kitzelman is a transfer tight end from Alabama who's now at Tennessee. They've been really impressed by him. They love what he can do blocking. They also think he's a great pass catcher as well. So from where I'm sitting, I see two tight ends for Tennessee that can play, and I'm excited to see how they utilize them when it comes to the formations they trot out there and how versatile they can be then in the run game. Now, going and saying in that vein of pass catchers, I said it during our show yesterday, but I want to make sure I echo the sentiment right now. I think Tennessee has four different wide receivers that could start most places in the country. Dante Thornton came in with a ton of fanfare last year, transferred from Oregon to Tennessee. And you just look at this dude. He's 6'5". I think he was somewhere in the range of 210, 215 last year. They have him listed at right now on the roster. And with the physical abilities he has and the way that he flashed at the end of the year for Oregon, it made sense why there was as much hype as there was. But seeing him in person, man, he looks a good bit thicker than I thought he was a season ago. He looks like he's bulked up quite a bit. And the key thing for him, I think getting a second year in this offense with how quickly they go offensively, with all the different things that you can't really be thinking about during the play. You just kind of have to get the signal, and then it has to be muscle memory to know where to line up and what your assignment is. I think that's going to benefit him in a very big way. He made some plays during the day that I was really impressed by. Kind of nice long touchdown in 7-on-7 from Nico. Dude's going to be a playmaker. So the size that he brings is a mismatch in itself. Speaking of size, you don't have just 6'5" Dante Thornton. You also got 6'5" Chris Brazel, who transferred in from Tulane, did great things over there, and now in Knoxville. They're really excited about him. He made a nice catch during their red zone period out there in the back of the end zone. Went up and climbed the ladder at its highest point, brought it in. He has got a tremendous catch radius. Like, there's not a lot of places you can put the football where Chris Brazel won't be able to snag it. I'm also curious to see where they line him up. I think he could play outside for you. If he can get acclimated quickly to the system, I think he could also be a guy that you see line up in the slot. So we'll see where they utilize him. Squirrel White, obviously, his game speaks for itself. Brew McCoy, when he gets back healthy. So that's four guys that I think you feel really confident in. And I haven't even mentioned Mike Matthews or any other cats they have on that roster in that wide receiver room. The key thing for me here, man, the depth they have in that room is so much better than what they had a year ago. And Squirrel White was great last year. I mean, 67 catches, led the team in receiving. But the next highest reception number outside of Squirrel White was 35. It's a pretty solid drop-off from 67 catches to 35. That means a lot of the footballs were going to number 10. And when you're able to just key on one guy in this Tennessee offense, it makes it a lot harder for who's playing quarterback for you. So Joe Milton's going to catch a fair amount of the flack, and some of that is fair to, you know, blame the quarterback. I mean, when you get all the praise, you get all the blame, but I think they're going to be able to put a lot more strain on defenses with how many guys they're going to be able to isolate in matchups and go make some plays for you. The early enrollees, specifically Mike Matthews and Boo Carter, I was really impressed by. Mike Matthews made a couple of nice plays during the 7-on-7 period, and yes, you're excited to see a talented freshman do talented things. He's going to be great when he gets, you know, fully up to speed in Knoxville. But I'm always curious to see how teammates interact with some of those younger guys. And when Mike Matthews would go up and make a catch, or there was one where he went up and skied on the sideline forward and came down just out of bounds, and there were older guys like a Squirrel White coming over to him and encouraging him, giving him some coaching points. And I'll say this, older guys, even the great leaders, they don't waste their time with dudes who can't play. Okay, so the fact that you're getting Squirrel White talking to him in his ear, like, I think that should tell you a lot about the spring that he's had, or I'm believing he's had. Boo Carter, competitor. That's the best label I could put on him, man. Dude competes. He was consistently involved in a lot of those team periods around the football. He's breaking up passes. Like, he might see some time in the return game, I guess. Which is how explosive he is. That would make sense to me. So, a lot of encouragement there out of those young bucks hitting the ground early, competing during spring practice. Very, very good sign. Now, Nico obviously was the main attraction, being the starting quarterback for them for the first time since arriving on campus, and all the fanfare that came with him out of high school and how highly touted he was, the number one player for us in the class of 2023. Not the number one quarterback, number one overall player in 2023. He was very, very engaged throughout practice. And it's one thing to be engaged when you're actually in the, you know, the drill, or you're the guy behind center. Nico Iamaliava, as I said yesterday, they worked a lot of quarterbacks in there, but even when he wasn't running with the ones, even when he was just sort of taking a beat and watching the guy behind him get some reps, and make no mistake, now I'm not implying that Nico isn't going to be your starting quarterback. I'm saying it's wise for a coaching staff to see different pairings of quarterbacks with different skill players around them. So that was the reason they did that, from my understanding. He was consistently taking mental reps. He's taking his shadow drop like 15 yards behind the play, going through his progression, going with the shadow throw where he would throw the football. That matters, man. I'm telling you that. You don't do mental reps if you don't love football and want to be great. So that was encouraging for me to see. Also, we said this yesterday, but I'll say it again. His ability to throw the football on the run, man, that's going to be a game changer for this offense. Because all those receivers I just mentioned a second ago, if you cover them on their first route, once Nico avoids that rush, breaks contain, it's a new play, you might be able to cover them for 3 seconds, but once we get into that 4-second range, 5-second range, it's going to be, I mean, that's a losing battle. It's a losing battle, and the way that Nico's able to flip his hips and deliver the ball with accuracy and velocity, like, he can go back across his body, and I know they probably don't want him doing that a whole lot, but if he does do that, he's not losing a lot off that ball when it comes to the mustard. So, overall, man, I think Tennessee's offense will be lethal. I think there's a lot of exciting pieces on this team. Defensively, I don't have a ton of notes for you just because there's only so much to take in my mind from spring ball, but I think the defense is going to be in a good position. They're really excited about what they have up front in that defensive line room. I think they got a lot better depth from previous years. So keep an eye on that, man. There's a lot to be excited about in Knoxville and a lot to watch this upcoming spring game. But in short, vibes are high at Tennessee, looking like a year four team. And the quarterback position, with Nico and some of the guys they got in there, Jake Merklinger, Gaston Moore, should be excited. All those guys look solid in my mind. Now, as we move into the spring game season, if you will, we got a bunch of games these next 2 weekends. This is kind of that time of the year where this narrative starts to bubble up and get some traction. A lot of folks saying that, hey, if you're a Alabama or you're a Georgia, you're one of those big boys, why don't you take that FCS game that you have sometime in November and move it to your spring game? And I see where this is coming from. I understand the thought behind it. Hugh Freeze actually has been one of the faces of this whole movement, saying, well, you know, we could have the game, be able to still, you know, have that FCS game get checked off our schedule, be able to raise a lot of money, give it to a certain cause in the state of Alabama. Like, it'd be a great thing for all parties. And I would say if this is something that you want to have the option to do, more power to you. If this is something that you decide best for your football team and the other football team at the FCS level, I'm not here to stand in the way of that. But I think there's a thought out there that this should be the way that spring games go, because you make it a TV product and you get, you know, another game on the schedule that's not an FCS team during the fall because you move it to the spring. And I'm just here to tell you, I'm not for that. I am not for that. And not only am I not for that, I think that's a bad idea from a football perspective. Because a lot of the talking points are going to be, well, it's great for fans. Why would you not want to see another game? Why, I mean, hey, if I'm a TV network, don't I want to have more inventory during the spring instead of playing, you know, baseball or whatever other sport is being played at this point in time? I hear that too. But the thing about this is spring practice, yeah, the spring game is for the fans to a degree, but I think also spring just period is about your football team. It's for evaluating what you have on your roster, trying to figure out your depth chart, trying to have as much learning as possible about the guys on your team. Having a spring game does not, or having a spring game against an FCS team, rather, does not keep intact all of your goals. So the first part of this is you don't protect your guys. Like, you hear coaches talk about this when it comes to spring games. I would venture to say if you asked every single coach in America the thing that they want to get done during spring football, they would either say this or think it goes without saying that they want to get out of the spring healthy. We don't want to lose anybody for the fall. We don't want to have anybody have a lingering injury. We want our guys to be as healthy as possible for when those games really matter in the fall. Great. Well, when I play another team at the FCS level, I don't expect the opponent to protect our guys the way the teammate would expect our guys, or would protect our guys, rather. Like, if I am a safety and I see a receiver coming across the middle, and I have a chance to just absolutely knock his block off. The freshman quarterback threw it late. It is what it is. He hangs the ball up there in the air. There is a certain code of conduct within practice that you do not lay your entire being through that dude's skull like you would if it were another team. If it's another team, blast him, dude. Like, it's football. But when it's your teammate, you just break it up, or maybe you go and just give him a little thud. You don't play the same tempo. You don't hit at the same tempo that you would against another team as you do your teammates. So that in itself, I think, is reason enough to be like, hey, I don't want to lose my star receiver because your hero DB decided to go and try and make a play in this spring game to try and help himself when it comes to that second portal window. That's the other part of this too. Like, if I'm a big-time school and I play an FCS school and that FCS quarterback balls out or that FCS linebacker balls out, like, I might be having a conversation with him in the following days when that portal does open up, or maybe the portal's already open depending on when you play your spring game. If I'm a FCS school, that doesn't help me. That's not something I want to do. I want to keep my guys as the best kept secret so that they don't hit the portal. I don't want them getting poached by X, Y, and Z school that we're playing against. So that doesn't make sense to me at the FCS level. And here's probably the second most important reason why this doesn't make sense, and why from a football vantage point this is not going to gain real traction. You cut your reps in half during a scrimmage for the guys that you can evaluate. Like, you hear coaches talk so much about how much 11-on-11 work they got, how much live work they got, how many plays they got. And if I'm going to take a unit of my team off the field for the entirety of a spring game, that's less information I get to get on our football team. And so there's a lot of people that are going to hear that and say, well, yeah, but like, do you really need to eval the walk-ons? What about that, you know, guy from Sig New that's playing corner for you? He's never going to see the field, right? Well, yeah, in a perfect world, they wouldn't see the field. But how many times have you sat down during a fall Saturday afternoon in early November and hear Chris Fowler talk about, hey, they just got bit by the injury bug. I've never seen this before. This guy's a walk-on. He's making his first start tonight. How many times have we heard that situation? Pretty much every single year it happens to some high-profile team. So being able to evaluate your depth and being able to get those guys ready to play, that matters. I understand it's not the most glamorous headline or you know, the thing that gets talked about the most, but I'm just saying, man, when it comes to evaluating your team during the spring, you want as much as possible on tape to take a look at and to have a good assessment of your team going into fall. So I understand if you want to have that option to do it, I'm not standing in the way of having an option. I'm just telling you, This is not going to gain traction, and this is not going to be a thing that the majority of college football coaches are going to sign up for. There's a reason why this has been talked about and never really gained the traction that it's gotten to be a reality. So, I understand. Spring games are fun for us as fans, but from a football perspective, I don't think that's going to be something that ever really happens. All right, going to get to your questions here in just a matter of moments. So get them in. We're going to get to three questions here in the next couple of minutes. So submit those via the live chat. Nick Brake about to join the show. Before we do that, though, I want to tell y'all that the Hard Count is brought to you by our friends over at Game Time. I told you guys a second ago, man, the fall is it's coming up here. All right, we're not that far from week zero. Yes, we honor and respect week zero around here. So when those weeks arrive and when that game comes, we're going to want to make sure that we're able to be at those events, that we're not just watching from our couch. If you do that for the majority of the season, great, but get to at least one game. Game Time is going to be the fast, easy, efficient way to get that done. When I say efficient, you can buy with like two taps of the button when you use the Game Time app. Terms apply. So download the Game Time app. Redeem code HARDCOUNT for $20 off. That's HARDCOUNT for $20 off. And know before you buy too, because whenever you buy via the Game Time app, you get to see the view from your seat before you even purchase it. So you know I'm not sitting behind the Jumbotron. I'm not sitting behind that one pole in the stadium that's supposed to be structural somehow to the integrity of the stadium, but my seat is right behind it. And that's why I got it for like a bag of chips and a couple of Chuck E. Cheese tokens. Game Time protects you from that. Again, redeem code HARDCOUNT, HARDCOUNT for $20 off via the Game Time app. Terms apply. Game Time. Best tickets, lowest prices, guaranteed. All right, let's keep a good thing going now. Let's bring on that man fresh off the road with us, Nick Brake. Nick, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Oh, man, I'll tell you, there's some serious stuff going on in the live chat.
We got beef?
Oh, man, like pretty bad beef. It's always Tennessee and always Sandman 23 who has chosen violence just about every day.
Some men want to watch the world burn.
Yeah, keep your language clean, fellas.
You've been warned.
Yeah,
you've been warned. What are they saying in the chat today, Nick? We got a nice little three piece to send us off into our early weekend.
Yeah, I've got one here. King Epic says, which head coach in college, or excuse, I'm going to read this again. Which college head coach retirement has or will have the largest impact on the future of college football based on what came out of their retirement? Bob Stoops, Nick Saban, or Urban Meyer?
It's a really good question. The Nick Saban retirement is top of mind, so that feels like the answer to me. Also, just the impact it had on the portal. Like, Urban Meyer and Bob Stoops, when they retired, obviously it had a big impact on the college football landscape. But, like, Nick Saban, when he retired, that's the reason Caleb Downs is at Ohio State. And so if Ohio State goes on and wins a national title this year, it's hard to not attribute some of that to the way that they added via the portal. So I would go ahead and say right now Nick Saban with a little bit of a TBD around that, but the portal impact and the ripple effect it had on other schools with, you know, then Washington having an opening and guys leaving from their school. And then you had Arizona hire another coach. And so, there was so many different moving pieces. And so I'll go ahead and say Nick Saban for right now. And I feel pretty confident thinking that's going to age pretty well when it comes to the impact in our answer there.
Dezu said, how about that Inter-Miami game? I did not watch. I do not watch the CONCACAF Champions Cup, but I did hear they lost yesterday. Next question, JD. We got this question. It is about USC. With how USC is recruiting, do you think they can end up in the top 25, top 5 or 10 of that class?
Right now, at last check, USC was top 3. Let's take a look at where they are right now so I can speak with some certainty.
It's really about, you know, can they hang on to those guys on the defensive line, man, in that class?
You hit it flipped on the head, man. If they can keep those big boys up front, that in itself is a win. And then also everyone's watching what Julian Lewis does. So USC, at the time of us being live, still the number 3 class in 2025. If they can keep the quarterback and they can continue to add talent, which is kind of a chicken or the egg situation. The more talent you add, I think the better chance you have of keeping Julian Lewis. I feel confident in saying they'll at least be top 10. Top 5 would be a really nice feather in the cap, though, for Lincoln Riley, his first year out there in the Big Ten. I will say, too, having success in the Big Ten is going to be very important for them to keep this class together. Like, if they go out there and just get dragged through the Big Ten and go 6-6, it's going to be this conversation of like, well, do I really want to go join a team that is just getting run through by the Big Ten and how physical they are? Like, they look like they're a few years away. A lot of question marks would arise that I don't think USC would like to deal with. So win ball games, add talent, keep your quarterback. Top 10 class feels very, very reasonable. And top five if you know, have the success that you would like to have.
Yep, absolutely.
On the field.
Daisy says, thanks for reading. Hey, look, if someone mentions soccer here, I will read it as much as everyone, including JD, will hate me reading it.
Yeah, that's not a, I don't know if I would keep doing that, Nick.
This
chat is like...
Yeah, I know they're unforgiving.
They're brutal, man.
Turkey Slammer says, JD, who has the best D-line in the country this season?
Best D-line in the country this season. Ohio State's got to be up there, man. Jack Sawyer, JT Tuimoloau. I'll go ahead and lean Ohio State right now when it comes to proven guys, but I would fully expect the usual cast of characters to be in there. Your Georgia's, Alabama's excited about their D-line. So I'll say Ohio State right now for what we know. Hey, I wasn't trying to shoot you down there either, Nick. I'm just saying this is an angry mob.
Well, OG Gary's on my situation. Side. OG Gary's on my side. Said, tell JD to keep calling it a pitch.
Keep calling it a pitch. Yeah. Hey, Beckham Doc. Good. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Came really late to the show, but I'm glad you made it.
I make zero apologies for watching the Beckham doc when I did. Okay, apologies.
Hey, better late than never, my friend.
Yeah, better late than never. What we got anything else here, Big Nick, or was that number three?
That was three?
Mm-hmm. How about it? Nick, anything that you want to leave us with here? Kickball keeps getting rained out on us, bro.
Rained out. We got beat 16-1 a couple weeks ago, so okay. I'm not going to be talking about kickball a whole lot this year.
We'll bounce back. I mean, probably a good team if they're scoring 16 runs.
They weren't very good. Okay. Maybe it's me. I'll see you, GD.
Okay. The man, Nick Brake, man, the myth, the legend. Nick, working overtime this week, jumping on the road, setting up everything in Tennessee, in Tuscaloosa, making it all happen here. Also got the live show rolling yesterday in Tuscaloosa, so appreciate him immensely for getting all that done and making the show happen in the fashion that it does. Appreciate y'all tremendously. Thank you for being dialed in. Thank you for acknowledging college football as a year-round sport like we do on this show. We appreciate y'all. We love y'all. We're going to keep this party rolling, and we will see y'all next time.